Hello again, and welcome to episode 4 of the Copper Boom podcast. As always, you can reach me by email at thecbcast@gmail.com, thecbcast. Twitter is at cbcpod, and the website is cbcpod.blogspot.com. As you may have noticed from the intro music, it is indeed Halloween today. I'm not a big Halloween celebrator, but, you know, for the sake of the podcast, I'll do a little ukulele Halloween theme. Now that I'm in Los Angeles, usually I don't do anything up in San Francisco, but now that I'm here down in LA, there's quite a bit of Halloween things to do, and so I've actually been kind of active. I didn't get to do Halloween Fright Night at Universal Studios, which I wanted to, but by the time I was committed to actually spending the money for it, it was already too late. So, yeah. Unfortunately, they do not run. Most shows seem to run until at least the first week of November, but Halloween Haunts is very strict on its killing it at Halloween. I wish I could say that the Halloweeniness of this podcast is going to extend all the way through, but I probably won't. But I'll try to keep some sort of a theme going or keep it somewhat thematic. In an effort to maintain that, first up is a review of a haunted house. Enjoy. Haunted house review. Last Thursday, I went to the Blum House of Horror. It is a haunted house located in downtown LA. It is put together by Blumhouse, which is Jason Blum's production company. You know him as a producer of Paranormal Activity, Sinister, Insidious, and etc. So, as a big fan of his films and of the mood, as a fan of the production company's films, I thought The Haunted House would be exactly up my alley. After going to Delusion, which I really enjoyed because it was more mood and terror than just outright jumping, people grabbing you, kind of the schlocky, not scary farm sort of generic horror, I ended up going to it. And under the premise that it would be more magical because it was set around a magician act gone wrong in the 30s or 40s, and I thought based on the mood of Insidious and Sinister and all those other films, where they have jump-out scares, but they're more kind of establishing this oppressing nature. I guess having just seen Sinister, I was really hoping for that kind of vibe. And what ended up being was a very interesting location because it's in a theater in downtown LA. So the set design was really well done. The costumes were very well done. But it was more like an above-average kind of generic haunted house. Every room, something would jump or grab or pull or push. Or it was that kind of loud noises and clangs. It was very schlocky, and I enjoyed it. And I thought it was worthwhile, but because my expectations were of something else, I ended up maybe not enjoying it as much as I could have. And it was very brief. There was no queue waiting, but it felt rushed because the setting is so interesting and because everything was so interestingly done, I kind of wanted to spend more time in each room. And it just felt like we were rushed through it. So discount tickets were about $35 and per person, with tax and everything. It was like $30 with tax. And even so, it felt... it was good, but not great. I'm not sure if it was worthwhile, and especially after Delusion. My expectations and having done Delusion previously had kind of marred the experience. But it was, production value-wise, very high. Oh. I'm not disappointed that I did it, but I don't necessarily think I would do it again either. In case you're wondering about the fact that I never give numbers or letters or any other kind of grading, I don't believe in that sort of reviewing or critiquing. I believe in explaining yourself, in giving thoughts, in explaining why you feel the way you feel and explaining your feelings, but never arbitrary scoring like yay or nay. Just if you enjoyed it and why you enjoyed it. And that's what I try to do. I try to convey why most things I tend to be favorable for, because I tend to be kind of a soft judge. And so I try to explain why. So even if you don't necessarily agree with the opinion, you would understand where I was coming from and judge for yourself. So that's what I hope to achieve with my critiques. Console review. The console game I played this week was for XBLA Indie. I'm not sure what the Xbox Live Indie Arcade is called, but anyway, the game I played on it is Penny Arcade's On the Rain Slick Precipice of Darkness 3. As you can tell from the title, it is the third in a presumed quadrilogy of Penny Arcade Rain Slick Precipice Tales. I played half of the first one, never finished it, completely skipped the second one, jumped in on the third one. And while you are missing a lot of references, it's not necessary in which to play it. This is by Zboid Games, so it plays like a classic NES, SNES era RPG. There's not really a lot of nuance to it. It's pretty straightforward. You go from location to location on a world map, pushing forward a story, gaining items, leveling your items, and pushing the story. The story itself, though, is very amusing. And as a fan of Penny Arcade, there were a lot of callbacks to not just other games in the series, but the comics itself. So if you're a Penny Arcade fan, this is a good game. Its difficulty, it's pretty straightforward. So you can make it more difficult by raising the difficulty level. But if you're not much of a video game player, but a Penny Arcade fan, I would still suggest playing it because it's so easy to just jump into. And there's a lot of form within the job system. But if you don't care and you just stock up on ways to protect yourself or have a healer or whatever, you can get through the game is what I'm saying, basically, no matter what. But if you want to be more tactical, or if you're more of a video game veteran who likes things to be more of a challenge, raise the difficulty level. I decided to review this game, even though it's been out for a couple months, but to celebrate that it just came out on iOS and certain Android. So even if you don't have an Xbox, you don't need that to play it. All you need is an iPad or an iPhone or a insert Android device here, and you can play it. And because it's a turn-based RPG, there's not really anything timing-wise that would require fast reflexes. It all should work pretty easily. It transfers easily its type of gameplay to mobile and touch gaming. So there's many ways to play. If you're a Penny Arcade fan, game on. Earlier on in the podcast, I was talking about Blumhouse. Well, here's the latest Blumhouse film. I'm now reviewing Paranormal Activity 4, the fourth in a who knows how long series of found footage films. Just so you know, I'm actually a huge fan of the series. I am very interested in the storyline, and I have to say that this one, if you're a fan of the other ones, is the first one where you're starting to see behind the curtain in a negative way. It's starting to wear you down, and it's not as interesting as the other ones. And in fact, if you're going purely from the narrative, it obfuscates the story even more. Within the trilogy, you understand that the first one is the third one, and then the second one takes place before, during, and after the original Paranormal Activity. And it's pretty clear that there's a demon involved, and the demon wants a first male son, and these two sisters are kind of having having to deal with the demon and their families. But in this one, they introduced a lot of different elements that confuse the story. So where it once felt like it was on a steady track, a logical track, logical for, you know, demons and whatnot, it's gone off into these new directions, which currently in the series, not knowing what's coming next, I don't know. I don't think I like it because it took the story that I enjoy and kind of took away the coherence of it. And this may have a payoff later, and this may make more sense after more films. But another issue I have, which directly relates to the story starting to get confusing, is that the narrative style is beginning to wear and wane. I'm usually a fan of the found footage horror genre, and all these films have worked, and this one still technically works, but a lot of the tricks are tricks you've seen before, and the couple of times they subvert what you expect, which every film does to great effect. In this one, there was less of it, and it had less of an effect, and it just felt like it felt too slow. It felt like at this point in the game, if you've seen the other three, you know the format well enough that you don't want the film to take so long for the spooky and the creepy and the dread. And the feeling of spooky, creepy, dread never really fulfilled its promise like the other films were able to accomplish. So I'm not sure what I would want from the other ones, but it seems like it, unless they find a new way to subvert the genre dramatically, I think I would want to continue the story of Paranormal Activity without the current format, because, I mean, four in, the same format is, I don't know if it has any life left in it. So my suggestion for you, if you have an interest, is to maybe wait for a rental. You know, you can Redbox it or something and not have to pay as much, because it's not necessarily worth seeing in theater. But if you're a fan of the genre, or a fan of this series, then you will want to see it eventually. And I hope the next one is better. But I don't know, what could make it better? I mean, they could do like a Blair Witch Project and have a sequel that has nothing to do with the format of the first. And then they could really dig into the mythology. But I'm not sure if anyone else would be interested in that like I would. Anyway, so yeah, rent it if you want, but don't necessarily spend the cash to see it in the cinema. iPad apps, hog reviews, 2-in-1, just for use. That's right, I said use. For a change of pace, I thought I'd do dual reviews, or dueling reviews, for two hidden object games, also known as hogs. First up is Sherlock Holmes and the Hounds of Baskerville by Big Fish Games, and the other one is Midnight Mysteries Haunted Houdini by Mumbo Jumbo Games. As I said before, these are hidden object games, which is primarily considered a older female audience, but it's actually one of my favorite current genres. It kind of takes the old adventure game kind of gameplay, but condenses it, wraps it up in a nice story, but gives you little puzzles along the way. It's kind of like Professor Layton, with less puzzles and more of an integrated narrative, which I love. Stories, and I love the storytelling of video games, so that's kind of why this is one of my favorite genres right now, even though it's considered casual. It's not like an energy bar game, though. It's a mixture of simple, rudimentary kind of puzzle solving, logic-based puzzles, location-based puzzles, and also finding objects in areas that are hidden. The interesting thing about comparing these two games is they both come from different companies. Companies where that kind of, I guess, it sounds vulgar, but they crank out these games. So Big Fish put out the Sherlock Holmes one, and it plays like other Big Fish titles. But because it has that Sherlock Holmes kind of gloss over it, facade, I was really interested in playing it. And when I did, I realized that I enjoyed it, but I think if you're a true Sherlock fan, it may offend you, the liberties and the stretches that it makes. It casts you as the famous detective, but it reframes a old Sherlock Holmes tale into an actual kind of psychological horror story, and it doesn't justify the paranormal, but actually confirms it, which is a little bit different. As other Big Fish games, if you can find it on sale in the App Store, for example, if you use App Shopper, which is a favorite app of mine, and wait for it to go on sale, it only gives you get less than 5 hours. I mean, depending on how fast you race through it, you could probably do it between 2 to 5 hours. I tend to kind of enjoy the environments and take my time. I don't look up solutions. And every so often, there'll just be one really niggling thing that keeps me from getting through and getting caught up. So it takes me more to the five-hour realm. But for like a dollar or two, I think it's worthwhile. And the other game is the Haunted Houdini, which I also have an interest in Houdini, and I'd never played a mumbo-jumbo game before. So I wanted to see how their hogs kind of differed. And this one it felt more static. So the graphics were better, but the world itself, it felt less like you could manipulate it. I'm not describing it very well, but if you play it for yourself, I'm not sure how the other Mumbo Jumbo games are, but it seems more gamey, where I feel like the Big Fish stuff, they kind of immerse you in the world better. That said, I did enjoy both of them. They both had kind of settings of magic and paranormal that I enjoy, with characters that I care about, i.e. Houdini or Sherlock Holmes. And I had a lot of fun. The hidden object aspect of it is slightly motivated, in which I say it's not completely arbitrary like some hidden object games where you have to find a key, so you have to collect 50 kerchiefs to get it. This is more like you have to find a key, so you look through a key chain, and there's lots of other crap that you have to find along with it. And it kind of makes more sense. And Mumbo Jumbo does it basically the same way. For comparison, to me, the example of the best hog is Campfire Legends Trilogy. It's a series of three games that unfortunately is not on iPad, but it really should be, that both the story, the protagonist, and all the puzzles all kind of coalesce in a really organic way. And all the things that you have to find in it are things that you actually use, which is really, really rare. I haven't seen any other hog that does that. So these aren't on that level, but they are a lot of fun, and they do provide mild entertainment. So if you've never tried the genre and you have an iPad, definitely give it a go and see if you like it, because I think it's one of the more interesting tracks of video gaming right now and some of the better single player experiences, and it's a good fun way to spend time, I think. I'm there in the water, still looking for ya. I'm there, feel so high, I got a life, I need to be free with you tonight. I'm exhausted with loving. There is but just the teeniest tease of Ellie Goulding's new CD or album. Ellie Goulding's new album is called The Hay Salon, and it is great. It is in the vein of her previous efforts. She is a British pop artist. She has a wonderfully expressive, soulful, interesting, unique voice. She sounds like a folk singer, and she could very well be a folk singer, but she tends to lean towards pop EDM or electronic dance music. So strong are her dance music and electronic music leanings that it's like this kind of weird melding. And while I tend to favor her slower tracks or her acoustic versions of things because I like to strip away all the artifice and just get straight to the vocals, I do like the tracks that she works with. I don't know if it's because she's dating Skrillex or what, but there is more of what's the contemporary dubstep is kind of integrated into this album more than the previous one. Initially, when I first heard it, I thought that I didn't like it as much as I liked the first one. But as upon repeat listens, I've actually gotten into it, and I really kind of enjoy it now. But be aware that it is a proper dance record, good or bad, with vocals that could soar far above them. I really enjoyed the album, and I tend to favor kind of the female singer-songwriter, which you could say that she is. I mean, she writes songs, she sings them. It just happens to be to danceable tracks. If you you can look her up online, listen to YouTube videos, listen to the things that I played before this review, and if that kind of sounds like it would interest you, definitely give the new album a listen. It's pretty good, and it'll grow on you. And if you are a fan of her first U.S. release, Lights, it's more of what you got on that album. Not exactly the way you got it. There's no song as good as The Writer, but a lot of the songs are growing on me. Who knows, maybe one will become as good as that song is to me. Well, that's another episode of the Cover Boom Podcast in the bag. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you'll be back next week. Have a good Halloween. Boo. And as always, oi with the poodles already.